Welcome, everybody. Artie Rosenbaum with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's topic, when plan sponsors have to tell their 401k plan. And of course, before we get into the topic, next week will be that 401k National Virtual Conference, Thursday and Friday, January 21 and 22, 2021, $33.33 and up to be a part of the event. Event kicks off at 11 a.m., goes through 5:30. A lot of fun for both days. Walt Frazier, Doc Gooden will be there, Retireholics, Congressman Jamie Raskin, who's, of course, been in the news. You know, we had this little thing on Capitol Hill. It's going to be a really fun event. You could check. We do have the agenda out. Go to that 401ksite.com for further information, and I hope that you're a part of it. A lot of work went into hosting this event, and we got a lot of great presentations, and we hope that you can certainly be a part of it. As far as this week's topic, it's always interesting about clothing, especially men's suits. I never really told the story before, but there was a winter, there was a summer after my first year of college, and then the winter in between, where I did work at a men's clothing store in Brooklyn, New York. It was a relative of a relative. It was on Coney Island Avenue, selling very, really excellent suits. That was the early 90s. I remember from the store, I eventually got around 1992, I got a teal suit that at the time looked really, really great. Before I met my wife, I was buying double-breasted suits, and that's something that really hasn't come back in style that much. It's all single-breasted all the time. Double-breasted suits were very, very popular in the late 80s, early 90s. I remember, oh, single-breasted, who needs single-breasted? But the thing about suits, it's always, I'm still like a snob. Well, first of all, who the heck wears suits anymore? Thanks to this pandemic, I haven't had a suit on in, probably since February. And, you know, with this COVID weight where you gain 20 pounds just by looking at food, which I'm trying to take off now, my suits probably don't fit, but I will get back to it, and I certainly will fill it. When it comes to suits, I'm kind of a snob. Well, I'm not really a snob since I shop at Joseph A. Bank, but it's always fascinating that, where you can pick up a suit. I mean, you can pick up a suit at Costco sometimes when they have a special, or some of the other stores. I mean, I wouldn't be picking up suits. There's certain stores I couldn't fathom, you know, picking up a suit at Marshall's or TJ Maxx or whatnot. I'm always fascinated by suits because I kind of have a weird shape. I have like no shoulders. So when it came to tailoring, I would have to do a lot of work. To me, a 401k plan is like a suit. You can, you know, unfortunately, I think too many plan sponsors take one off the rack, put it on them, and it's not a good fit. Same thing like a suit. Like I said, you go to Costco, pick up a suit. If you don't tailor it, it's, you know, your body, you know, is kind of weird. I mean, I've never bought a custom-made suit, and I don't think I'll ever buy a custom-made suit. I could simply take something off the rack, hire a good tailor, spend $25, $30, and get it to a suit that, you know, fits me well. You can, of course, go, and there are people that do buy custom-made suits. I'm not at that level yet, and based on my practice, working from home and wearing Mitchell & Ness jerseys, I'm not really interested in doing that. But plan sponsors really need to understand that, like a suit, there are points where they need to tailor it, and I think they should always tailor it. You really can't have a solution that's right off the shelf and expect that it fits. And, you know, there are times when the 401k plan sponsor really has to understand that while they have it, whether it's off-the-shelf prototype document from the payroll provider or whether it's a individually designed plan or volume submitter, even then they're still going to have to further tailor it because, you know, the plan isn't written in stones. You know, the plan isn't written in stone. Too many plan sponsors really have a kind of a set it and forget it attitude for their retirement plan. They create it, they never think about it again. And the problem, you know, is that the 401k plan, you know, is governed by a plan document. It's a legal document. It's like the Constitution. It's living and breathing. And, you know, there are certain situations like the Constitution. There may be points where you want to amend it and fix it. You know, back in the day in the original part of the Constitution, if we didn't have the Bill of Rights, we'd have no right, free exercise of religion, right to speech, right to a jury trial, the right against self-incrimination, all that kind of stuff. So just like the Constitution, you know, the plain document can be amended and fixed when it needs to be fixed. You know, obviously there are situations and priorities that, you know, can change. And the plain document should obviously reflect that kind of change. And you really, you know, as a plan sponsor, you know, plan sponsors, you know, have to hire competent plan providers that are very proactive. They're not reactive. They can advise when the plan document needs to be amended to reflect the changing environment around the plan. And, you know, it's important that plan sponsors never really forget as to why they set up that 401k plan or that other type of retirement plan in the first place. They really forget that the 401k plan can be an effective means of recruiting and retaining employees. Did I change jobs because a 401k plan was better? No, but, you know, it did affect me when, you know, I worked at an employer and the 401k plan wasn't very, very good. And the issues, you know, dealing with that. And I think they forget that, you know, like health insurance, gym discounts, you know, transit benefit, whatever the benefits may be. You know, I had one job where, you know, 13 years ago, I joined the credit union that was associated with them, and I'm still paying off that HELOC for my house. I think this is the year we might finally retire it. You know, that was a benefit. But, you know, 401k plan sponsors don't really understand and kind of forget, a lot of them, that this is a great tool to, you know, reward employees, recruit them, retain them. And, you know, when you forget that, that's when the plan, you know, runs its problems and really isn't the right fit anymore. And, of course, you know, talking about tailoring and changing environments, there's nothing that changes more when the demographics of the business changes. You know, you set up a 401k plan, you know, it could have been set, you know, it could have been created close to when the business was created. And it could have been created when it was at the time implementation of the company. The employee demographics were quite different than they may be today. You know, 401k plan is like fashion. It needs to change with the times. And talking about fashion, I always love that. You are always told there are certain things that come back into style. And I want to say that the ruffled shirt and the velour suit that I had wearing at my cousin's bar mitzvah never came back into style. The ruffled shirt never came back into style. Bell bottoms never came back into style. And so it's important to realize that you know, there, you know, when it comes to fashion, there are certain things that just never come back into style. You know, bell bottoms really never really came back. And of course, the leisure suit. I still have a picture of me when I was like six with a red leisure suit. And my God, was that ugly. It was ugly then. But anyway, like fashion, the 401k plan really has to change with the times. Employee base grows, contracts, or is different from the last time the 401k plan was looked at or changed. You know, a plan sponsor really needs to check if the plan still fits their needs. What worked then for the plan may not work well today. You usually have that a lot with defined benefit plans. And for example, you know, my biggest problem with the defined benefit plan was, I've always told the story, plan sponsor put all their money in with Bernie Madoff. So $3 million was lost. That was certainly a problem. And aside from that, the defined benefit plan was no longer fitting the needs of the plan sponsor. What was good for 6 employees was not exactly good for 12. So they started when it was 6, and then, of course, it grew to 12. It became more prohibitively expensive. So forget about the Madoff situation. It was a plan that no longer fit their needs and no longer fit their budget. So, you know, if a business on a 401k side is doing well, well, maybe this is a time to look at new comparability. If demographics change and non-highly compensated employees are not deferring, maybe revisit and see if a safe harbor contribution is an opportunity. So it's extremely important that, you know, when a business changes over time, every once in a while, it's important to look at the parameters set forth by the plan document and see whether, the contribution formula has got to be tweaked. If testing could become an issue, and maybe a safe harbor plan design is really important and necessary. Next is when business really isn't good, and unfortunately, the COVID pandemic, we've seen that. So many businesses were negatively impacted. Some, you know, just really had to close down the doors. Others really had to come back on their benefits. You know, it's a problem when so many plan sponsors, you know, had safe harbor contributions or stated matching contributions. And of course, obviously, if there was turnover employees where like 20% of their employees were gone, that could be an issue too, if you had a partial termination. And, you know, whether, regardless of the way the business was impacted, I think that this is a good time for 401k plan sponsors to look and see whether they can really tailor their plan. Next, obviously, if, as touched upon, if the plan sponsor is failing discrimination testing, that could be ADP, ACP tests, that could be top heavy, that could be minimum coverage, whatever it is. If a plan sponsor is failing their discrimination testing, obviously that is certainly a priority and a need to get things fixed and to get things looked at. Of course, making sure plan providers are still effective, it's important to check a plan sponsor to check whether their plan providers still work. It reminds me when I was a kid, I had this really great pediatrician. I mean, he was a good pediatrician. He was terrible when it came to allergies, and being an allergist, give me allergy shots. It would have been nice for Dr. Offel to say, Ari, you missed 4 weeks of shots. Maybe I should cut back on the diluted, shot, and I can avoid you having an allergic attack and have to give you adrenaline and Benadryl in a shot. But there was a certain point where, you're 20-some years old, you no longer can go see the pediatrician. It's time to go see an internist. And when a 401k plan size, 401k plan grows in size, the plan sponsor really needs to make sure that they can, that their plan providers are still effective and can still handle a plan of that size. You have a plan provider who's really excellent on the micro plan business. It may be a terrible fit when the plan has assets of $5 million or more. There is no plan provider out there that can handle every single type of 401k plan. Some para providers are probably very good when you have a safe harbor plan. The moment there's any type of testing, they may not be very good. And I've had that experience with a lot of plan clients. There are a lot of plan providers who have no experience in plan design, such as new comp, working with cash balance, all that kind of stuff. Plan sponsors really need to make sure that the plan provider that they're actually working with is still the right kind of fit. you can be loyal, you know, you should, you know, loyalty to your spouse is commendable. So is even loyalty to a sports team or an alma mater. But plan sponsors, I see a lot of them have a weird kind of loyalty to a plan provider, and that's not something that should be done. You know, as a plan fiduciary, you have to put the needs of the participants before your loyalty to any plan provider, and need to cut them loose when they no longer fit the needs of the plan. You know, there are times in any relationship where, you know, you may have to say goodbye. And when a plan achieves a certain kind of level that the plan provider can no longer properly service, that's the time to say goodbye. And there's nothing wrong with being honest and letting go of these relationships. It's also important for a plan sponsor to make sure that the plan is still, you know, cost effective. I've been in this business for 22 years. And for most of the time, up until 2012, plan sponsors really didn't know, fully understand the costs of their plan because their plan providers weren't required to reveal all the fees that they were collecting in the plan, whether it was directly or indirectly. Obviously, we all know that that practice changed in 2012 thanks to fee disclosure. I still love for the fact that I was calling for fee disclosure in 2010, and, you know, I was accused of being a troublemaker, and, you know, it's wrong, and this and that, and with fee disclosure, all these 401k plan sponsors are going to terminate their 401k plans, and, you know, chicken little, the sky didn't fall with fee disclosure. But since then, plan sponsors can understand how much their plan is paying in fees. The problem is that plan sponsors really ignore the fee disclosure statements, and they just throw it in the garbage or put it in the back of the drawer or whatever it is. Obviously, when plan sponsors get those fee disclosure statements, they actually have to determine whether the fees are reasonable for the services provided. That means going and shopping the plan around, either to other providers who offer similar services, or to use a service to, you know, benchmark those fees. And again, you know, this goes back to, you know, small, when your plan was small, your providers may be excellent and more cost effective than when the plan is larger. You know, as I speak here from my office at home, I always bring up the examples of using home contractors on my house. People that we used were expensive. We didn't realize that until we got rid of those people and used other contractors. Whether we overspend on our home construction, that's on us. When you're a plan fiduciary, plan sponsors a plan fiduciary, they really don't have that kind of luxury. As a fiduciary, fiduciaries have the obviously the highest duty of care and equity in law. And when you're responsible for other people's money, you need to be more sensitive. You have a higher duty of care. And so you can't overpay like you would with your own stuff. You know, it's the same concept. You want to go to Bloomingdale's and buy a Lacoste shirt at $70. That's on you. But, you know, as plan fiduciary, you actually have, you know, you would need to go to the outlet store in Riverhead by me, Lacoste, and pay $40 for the same shirt or whatever it may be. You know, it's okay to be extravagant on yourself, but a plan sponsor can't be. And that, again, that's another reason why, you know, plan sponsors really have to tailor their 401k plan. So, that's a short little episode this week. And again, I hope you guys sign up for that 401k National Virtual Conference. Go to that 401ksite.com for further information. It's a great couple days. The beauty of it is going to be recorded. And so therefore, if you decide that, you know, you have something more pressing, you can certainly go back and find, you know, where you left off and what you've missed. So, again, I thank you all. And, again, hope you guys could join me next week on the podcast and next week at the conference. Take care. Bye.